Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to the Slaughter Podcast.
Oh, we're changing it up, are we?
Yes.
Merry Christmas!
Unless you're not listening to this at Christmas time, in which case, happy Wednesday.
Right. Oh, just before we started, I thought I'd mention there's been some updates. This is ill-informed because I don't know exactly what they are, but I know that Babes in the Wood... he's been re-arrested. I don't even know his name.
He's been Mr. Babe.
This man.
Off of the woods. Because we did the episode where we had two babes in the woods at once, didn't
we? Yes. My babes in the
wood. Your babes in the wood. I'm taking responsibility for this murder.
So Russell Bishop has actually been jailed for the crimes now. I'm not going to say it's down to us. Because
we did draw attention to the crime right about the time it happened.
In around 100 people.
I mean, cause and effect is a weird thing.
Yeah.
The universe is always busy.
Yeah, I mean...
We're not claiming we did it. We just can't be convinced that we didn't contribute to it.
Us and the teacher's pet. I mean, like, it's sort of the same now. So, anyway, it's exciting because he's been arrested for the murder of the two girls. And I said at the end, I hope he's done it because I've made out he's done it this whole episode. And thankfully, it's pretty clear he has. Anyway.
That's there's one good thing to come out of this situation. Is that now I'm you accurate. Are validated.
Yeah. So I'm going to be doing the crime, the murders by David.
Let's hope they fucking did it.
Yeah.
Because they're going to get caught after.
David McGreevy. And this was one that was recommended, I think, on Twitter. By a listener. And
I started researching this one. I don't know if I said that on Twitter. I started researching this one and was like, it's too gross.
Well,
I was like, surely not, people will not be down for this story. And then they were recommending it, so fuck it.
Well, I thought the week before Christmas was the perfect time for it.
I couldn't eat. Yeah.
It's grim. I've not gone into I've gone into too much detail, but
I don't know the details of the story. I just know there's a lot of imagery.
Yeah, it's awful. But this is a murder podcast. It would be out of place on your Christian podcast. I think here it's fine. So he was born in 1951 in Southport. He was part of a large family, moved around in the armed forces. We've seen quite a lot of that before. I don't know.
Who'd have thought that professional killing would make you more likely to be a murderer?
Yeah, well, he wasn't actually in the armed... Well, he was actually in the armed forces for a bit, but
I don't think there's a link between that.
I don't know if there's a lot of these young kids who were grown up in the army, or I don't know if we've done so many murders that we're just... This is how... some people live. Yeah, I don't know if there's more of them or this is just a British thing.
Yeah, I don't think there's any correlation there.
So he seemed generally happy. He wasn't like some kids who were in a lot of trouble. He was pretty well behaved. He left school at 15 and then he signed up for the Navy. He didn't get on very well there. He was seen as a bit rude and arrogant. Nothing massive. But the people just didn't really like him. So he was dismissed from the Navy in 1971 because things did escalate and he started a fire in a waste paper bin, which caused some damage.
That's what he got fired for?
Yeah. I mean, it caused quite a lot of damage to a dorm room, but it's not like some of the aggression that we've seen.
A fire in a bin? That's like hijinks.
Well, the Yorkshire Ripper, he got turfed out because he said his... bum was burning, didn't they, the other week?
Oh yeah.
So this, I mean,
this burn, like a little fire in a bin.
Yeah.
Like we've all wanted to set fire to bins.
Yeah. I mean, we've all done it.
Everyone has done it. And I don't think people in glass houses should throw matches at bins.
So he moved back in with his parents in Worcester. And he began writing to the sister of one of the men that he met in the Navy. I think really his mate had gone, I've got a sister, you're single, I'll pass on her address. But she was like a sickly woman. I think probably he was like, she needs a boyfriend, you'll do.
She'll take anyone who yeah. can write.
Yeah, so he met her in person and very quickly, like within weeks, proposed to her. But he was unemployed. He was becoming an alcoholic. And
so
then,
a real catch.
And then he planned a really expensive wedding with money that he didn't really have.
He should have gone to Zola.
And then she dumped him.
Oh, fuck.
Because she was like, yeah, not for me. Like, I might have 1 year to live.
I don't want to spend it with you.
I don't know how ill she was. But she broke off the relationship. She was over it. So he began drinking even more heavily. He didn't really look for work either. So his parents decided to throw him out. They thought, that's a good incentive. So he found...
Sometimes you've done all you can do.
To be fair, he did seem to pick up after this. So he began living with an old school friend and his wife and their children, which is... sort of strange. Now it's the 70s, but he lives with this guy called Clive and his wife Elsie, and she had a baby when she was 16, so she's quite a young mother, but she's got another child by this point and she's pregnant again, and they'd kind of got married quite young because of this child as well. So he paid £6 a week and he rented a room, but he rented a room, it was him and the four-year-old child in this room.
That's
which is
not okay.
Really strange. Imagine that advert on Spare Room, like the kind of people that
I've got a spare room, but just a small portion of it has been used by a child,
a four-year-old. Like, what the fuck? So it very, very strange circumstances. Even in the 70s, that must have been weird.
It must have. Well, that obviously shows that they must have been doing it as a temporary thing, like just to help him out. You wouldn't have
years.
That kid grew up having a man in his bedroom.
Yeah, imagine that. Like, that's stuff of nightmares, but it's actually just a man.
Ooh.
Very strange. So Clive. I don't think David McGreevy worked. So Clive, he was a lorry driver. And once the baby was about 7 months old, so he's been there for months and months because she didn't have the baby when he moved in. Elsie got a job as a barmaid as well. So they're both working. So it sort of suited them because he would do the childcare then. So he's like a live-in babysitter. It's just weird that he was sharing a room with one of the babies.
He's basically a nanny.
Yeah.
Except his references are... Arsonists Anonymous, yeah. The Royal Navy Division.
Exactly. The neighbours and the wider family obviously knew that he was living there. They knew of him. They'd said no concerns. He was basically like a second father to these children. He seemed to be a fit parent, but he was only 20 years old. But then they'd been pretty young when they'd had the first child and the second. So he was a little bit younger than Clive, but he wasn't like ridiculously noticeably younger. And apparently, like, if Elsie got a little bit sort of, he thought she was being unfair on the children, he'd step in, he'd sort of advocate for the kids. So they kind of thought he's like a good man. Like,
they had no problems with him.
Yeah.
Then.
So the crime happens on Friday, 13th of April, 1973. I don't know if that's maybe where Friday the 13th being a horrible date comes from. I don't know. So Elsie was working at the pub that night. Clive was at home with McGreevy, but he left because usually when she was working late, what he'd do was he'd help her clean up at the end of the shift, and then he'd have a quick pint, and then they'd both drive home. So McGreevy would just be left in the house with the children. Perfectly normal night, nothing out of the ordinary. McGreevy had been at the pub earlier. He'd had about 5 pints. But remember, he was also an alcoholic. So probably was.
Oh yeah, all of those lovely things we were saying about him being a good babysitter. Yeah, have now just gone out the window.
I mean, I don't know how.
FYI, he was really drunk at the time.
True. So he got into a fight at the pub with his friend because he'd put out a cigarette in his friend's pint.
Oh,
which
my God.
Is the height of bad manners. Nobody wants that. So obviously his friend had kicked off quite rightly.
Apart from when we used to order fag ash pint.
I was thinking of that. But we
had mentioned fag ash pint.
We had to always say it like that though, didn't we?
Yeah. Fag ash pint.
Fag ash pint. But it didn't actually have any fag ash in it. It just tasted of fag ash.
It was a beer plus a shot of tequila.
Yeah, was it a Carling?
Something really
or
gross.
Carlsberg or something like that with a shot of tequila. And genuinely, it tastes like fag ash.
Yep.
And then we'd just dare people to drink it.
Yeah, if it was a particularly dull night out, we'd just be like, should we make someone drink a fag ash pint?
that was a spate of it, wasn't it? Yeah. It really upset your boyfriend at the time.
Yeah, he walked out, he like stormed off really mardy. No, I think I drank it. You can't waste a fag ash pint. That's the rules. Once you've defiled the drink in that way, someone's got to have it.
I don't know how we discovered that it tasted like fag ash. That must have been a messy night. So, while at home... Sorry, we're going to go to some horrific murder now. So,
you might want a fag ash pint with you for this. Have a quick sip and then let's continue.
So, at home... watching the children, there's a 7-month-old Samantha wakes up and she begins crying. So he responds by shouting at her because it's annoying. And then he tells her to shut up. She doesn't, obviously. So McGreevy puts his hand over her mouth and then he strangles her to death. And then mutilates her body with a razor and beats her, causing a skull fracture. Completely out of character for him.
That's like
if
he was blind, because he's looked after these kids for ages. Yeah. And was there any reports of him mistreating them?
Never.
Or dodgy injuries?
No,
so he's been fine with kids. Blind drunk, maybe he's like, oh, shut the fuck up. But then to mutilate afterwards, that's been burning inside you.
Yeah. So after killing the poor baby Samantha, McGreevy goes to find 2-year-old Dawn, who's asleep in bed, and strangles her in a bed, again uses the razor to slit her throat, and then he goes to find the 4-year-old, which is obviously in the room that he shares, who's called Paul, and he uses a curtain wire to strangle him and mutilate the body.
Do you think he thought, oh fuck, I've accidentally killed this baby, now I've got to make it look like someone has come in and attacked all of them to get away with it? Do you think he was trying to cover it up, like make it seem like someone had broken in and done it?
I don't think it is, because his response afterwards is really, he doesn't call the police and say someone's broken it. Like, he doesn't come up with anything else. But what he does next is even more horrific. That's not even the worst of it. So he goes down to the...
Yeah, you thought dead babies was the thing.
No, it gets way worse. So, I mean, I guess they're dead now, but no one else gets murdered, but it's just horrific. So he goes to the basement and he gets a pickaxe and he uses this to further damage the bodies. And then in a final like act, which I don't understand, it's not explainable, even he can't explain it, one by one he carries each body outside and just impales it on the next door neighbor's wrought iron spiked fence. So it's dark, and then obviously you've got these 3 bodies horrifically injured and impaled on this fence. So the neighbours don't see these, thankfully, but they do sense that something's wrong. I mean, he's clattering around the house, the baby was crying, lights are going on and off in different rooms. So they think something strange is going on in that house, so they call the police. The police come and they...
Oh, God, can you imagine driving? They weren't expecting that. They just heard a disturbance. And then you pull up to the house and they would have seen that straight away.
Exactly. By torchlight, so you'd have to be pretty near as well. They discover these bodies and they're throwing up. They're traumatised. They have to get counselling for post-traumatic stress disorder. So horrific, awful scene to come across. And something they'll probably never forget. So there's no sign of McGreevy at this point. And so obviously they set out to find the parents. They return home as they were on the way back from her work, and they're taken to the police station to be questioned. And I can't even imagine how horrific, traumatic that would be to find out all three of your children have been murdered by someone that you allowed into the house. And, you know, not even allowed into your own house. You get home and they're like, come with me. And to find that out is awful. Obviously, it's obvious they don't know anything about it. It wasn't them. They've got an alibi. So then they start looking for David McGreevy, who they say was living in the house, and becomes the main suspect. Now, it's only a few hours. It's not like he went on the run. He's literally in one of the next streets, just pottering around. And he's arrested. And initially, he tries to pretend that he's innocent, but not for very long. He very quickly admits to the murders. But he can't say why. There's no motive. He can't give a motive. He seems as confused by it as them. But there's no, like, hit to the head.
Do you think?
I don't know. I think...
Do you think it was, like, a temporary insanity?
Because I don't really want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, I think... But then there was no sexual contact. There's no, he didn't do anything sexual. That obviously wasn't a motive.
Do what you want, just don't get your dick out.
But he played with them, he protected with their, like, them every day, and then suddenly does this. Like, he was really involved in their lives. But then he's not going to be totally honest, either, is he? He's not going to be like, yeah, I've imagined doing this for ages. I just can't
get my head around it.
I can't.
I just hope that there wasn't, you can imagine, I know I'm not saying there should be, but you can imagine how when they were telling the police, oh yeah, and we have this 20-year-old homeless guy who sleeps in the room of the kids, it was probably him, that there would have been some judgment at the parents at that point.
Exactly.
Like, hold up, you let this strange man live in your house and look after your kids, this alcoholic guy.
That's true. So for the trial, the court was completely packed with locals because obviously they would be having the same conversations that we're having. How could he do it? How did no one notice?
Yeah, like, what kind of person is he? Like, you just would want to see him.
Yeah. And it says that he gave no plea. So I assume that means that he didn't say guilty or innocent. I don't know if you can do that.
I didn't think you were allowed to.
No. He never gave a motive, and he was found guilty of the murder of all the three children. And he was given a sentence of at least 20 years, which I think is a very small sentence.
So he wasn't given life?
No. 20 years for all three. Now, obviously, in prison, he becomes a massive target by all the prisoners, who also can't believe that he's done something like this. And I guess there's a hierarchy in prison. I guess paedophiles and child killers are the ones that the others sort of target. They're the bottom of that hierarchy. So he spent quite a lot of time in protection. He did sometimes stick up for himself, reportedly challenged Ian Brady to a fight over which was the most notorious killer in Britain. So there's some sense of sort of pride there of what he's done. In 2006, he was prepared for release, and he was actually let go for an evening. He stayed in a hostel, so like a bail hostel in Liverpool, and the press got photos of him walking around Liverpool unsupervised, and there was a media frenzy. People were disgusted that he was out of prison. So then he was put back in prison, and he's tried to file for the media to not be able to publish about him getting out the next time that he was supposed to be released. So he said, well, I've got a right to privacy.
Do you know how old he is now?
I know that he served this year, he did 45 years in prison.
So he's in his 60s then.
Yeah. So he's actually, on the 4th of December, having spent 45 years in prison, was granted release. So he is in the process of being released now into the public. The children's mother is absolutely devastated, obviously. The couple, so Clive and Elsie, didn't actually survive as a couple.
There's other people who aren't let out for less.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The argument is that he's no longer a danger to the public and he's reformed. And that he knows that he understands his crimes. He feels guilty for those crimes, and therefore why keep him in there any longer? Why spend the money of him being in there any longer? I mean, he's not going to have a good life when he gets out, because people are going to know who he is. And I'm sure there'll be people trying to find out where he's living and stuff, and doing stuff to his house and stuff. So, I don't know. Pretty grim. Really Grace. Unexplainable as well.
Don't Google it.
Yeah, horrid.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So, I'm now welcoming you to the second portion of this week's episode, starring me. I didn't do the murder, but I'm going to be reading about it. That would be the end of the podcast, though, when we do eventually kill someone.
Yeah.
So, we're going to July of 1960, and Sergeant Henry Burgess was on duty with a constable in the East Ham area of London. It was a Friday night. At this point was when all the pubs used to close at 11. You couldn't serve alcohol after. So around kicking out time, all you had to do was hang around a section where there's a few pubs, and there would always be some drunken altercations. And this night, there was a couple of young men having a fight outside of a pub as they left. And so Sergeant Burgess and his colleague intervened and arrested the two boys and took them to hospital because they did both have quite bad injuries. So once they were there, the boys were helped by a trainee nurse called Veronica Baker. And she was still only 18 years old herself.
Whoa. I'd be like, is there someone older?
Yeah. But I suppose there's two policemen there watching. She'd be fine. And it's the night shift on a Friday, so they have all the trainees on, don't they? But there was an instant connection and attraction between her and the 36-year-old Henry Burgess.
They were begging it there. Like, they were looking for that, because connections don't just happen when you're mopping up someone's blood on a Friday night.
It's not a romantic situation.
No.
Though technically old enough to be her father.
Ew.
Well, he was 36 and she was 18, so yeah, if he'd had it when he was 18, like, he could technically be old enough to be a dad. But I think that seems... like, I think it's that weird. Like, I think it's because now 30s just seems young to me.
But if one of my students said, I've got a boyfriend, he's 36.
Yeah.
I'd be like, that's
get on the blower to the
well
place.
If one of my friends, I have a friend who is 36 and he's dating a 20-year-old and I call him her paedophile all of the time.
You would.
I think it's really inappropriate.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like, it's not going to get on TLC or something.
True.
But so, while the pair were chatting just before they were leaving, married father of three Burgess claimed he was single and asked Veronica to meet up with him when they were both off work. Although I think from her perspective, I know he said he was single and fine, but having dated a lot of 30-year-old men in the last time I was single, there's usually a reason. Either they've got baggage, like it's really hard to find one who isn't divorced with kids, or it's pretty soon becomes apparent why they've never had that opportunity. Something's usually up. And he had his fair share of baggage. He was still in the relationship and he lived in the family home. But despite this, Burgess and Veronica began to have a steamy affair. He kept his family a secret and said to her, Veronica that is, that he was living in a police hostel and they didn't allow female visitors, so that's why he could never bring her around to his house. Instead, they would meet at some rooms that he'd rented.
I always think that's really grim. I don't know if I've said it on the podcast before, but when I used to live like in a shared house, and then a room came up free, and that someone offered that could they just have it as like somewhere they go and shag during the day for their affair, and then, but I like we were all
did
like,
you let them?
No, well it wasn't up to me, it was up to my landlord who owned the house, but she was like, oh no, that's weird. And we were all like, yeah, that's pretty weird, we haven't got locks on our doors, we don't really want them like shagging all over the house when we're out.
I mean, I know technically it's none of your business, but you don't want to feel like you're facilitating an adultery.
I mean, it's easy rent and there's no one using up the kitchen, but then...
But also it's like a creepy presence.
Yeah, oh, it's gross. So we said no.
No, thank you. So after 6 months of their carrying on, something prompted Burgess to tell Veronica the truth about his wife and children. I don't know why you ever would, but maybe she's just asking so many questions. If you've been dating for 6 months, you're getting to the point where you're like, do you love me? Maybe. What's happening here?
Maybe he watched something. Like my friend told her husband that she was cheating on him because she watched Mistresses one night.
Oh.
And they were on about cheating and coming clean. She was like, I'm going to go tell him.
And whoa. She did. That's impressive. Mm. Didn't end well though.
Well, she's with the other guy now that she was cheating with. Apparently, he was down as Lucy in her phone for a long time. And that's the reason, because he phoned and it flashed up Lucy. And then the husband picked it up. He was like, hi, Lucy. And the other guy was like,
I was like, don't cheat. Like, let's just stop.
Don't use my name.
Nobody cheat. So anyway, Veronica was just so infatuated with him that she just agreed to be his mistress until he got a divorce. So Burgess kept his rented love nest and he was able to say to his wife that it was shifts at work and overtime and stuff that was keeping him away from home. And this continued for 4 years.
Whoa.
So...
Oh, she could have had like a proper relationship in that time.
Exactly. He was taking the best someone. Years of her life, 18 to 22.
Yeah.
Obviously, she was young, so you can't blame her for she fancied this older guy. He's a police sergeant. They go like whisking her away to places. Like, yeah, you'd be into it. And you think everything's brilliant. You think if you're in love that's it's meant to be. And if you're in love, then everything's going to be fine. And it doesn't matter because one day you'll be together. It's not fucking true.
It's not.
Anyone can fall in love with pretty much anyone. Spend enough time with them. It'll happen.
I don't know if that's true, but I think she could have done better.
Like there's not a one is what I'm saying. No. 4 years. So 1964, Veronica, like it just frustrates me when young girls, like, you know, now I'm on the other side of it. I just feel like I should be going out and telling young girls to dump all the weirdos. Just dump them all. Stop investing your time in weirdos.
You're right.
Go traveling.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Walk dogs in your free time. Go on. I don't.
Mm.
Learn to crochet. Crochet feminist slogans into blankets and then give them to homeless people. There's so many better things you can be doing with your time. Okay. Anyway, 1964. Veronica was getting fed up of being the mistress, finally.
Good.
And she wanted to become his wife. She wasn't still ready to dump him. So she continued with the relationship, but she was making her feelings known. And I think all of us, again, in my sage wisdom, I think we all know that if you nag about being married, it doesn't make people want to marry you.
No.
So she, things started to get awkward and things started to cool a little bit. So what was weird, though, I found about this was that their relationship wasn't all like skulking around and hidden. Like from her side, he was being this dutiful boyfriend. Like she would live, she had a flat where she lived in the week when she was at work. And then at weekends, she would stay at home with her parents around East Ham. And Burgess would go and see her when she was at her parents' house. And like he met her mum and dad and went out to the pub with her dad. And
did they know it was an affair?
They didn't know it was an affair.
I mean, I guess this is like pre-Facebook. You couldn't get away with it now because you'd be tagged in a photo within about 5 minutes.
But he was really like invested in it. He was, you know, her family and everything. So things began to start changing that Christmas Eve. So rather than be with his family, Sergeant Burgess went on a date with Veronica. I mean, you've got three young children. You think Christmas... Anyway, just being judgy tonight. He went on a date with her, though he knew something was wrong because she hadn't kissed him in the usual way she would, like she was being a bit off. Later that night, they were back at Veronica's parents' house and they had it to themselves. So they were sat on the sofa together and obviously Henry Burgess, trained police officer, used to spotting things. He noticed a photograph on the mantelpiece that had just been placed behind an ornament. So sort of like in an effort to hide it. So he pulled it out and it was a photograph of a young man. And so he was like, who is it? Why has it just been hidden here? And Veronica just was trying to say, oh, it's a guy I met when we were up in Scotland. He's just a friend, like, isn't anyone.
He can hardly get jealous. I mean, come on.
Exactly. Well, then, in the reports that I read, it said that, oh, she eventually admitted that he was a boyfriend. This boyfriend's never mentioned before. So I think he was just, like, they're having this couple's argument. He's just going on and on. Who is he? Who is he? So I think she just eventually said, well, he's my boyfriend. What are you going to do about it? You're married anyway.
Yeah.
And like, it just was an argument in that way. Just to see what would happen, I think. Because if you're jealous, what do you want to do? Like, if you want to be with me, let's just be together.
Because she could have. If she wants to be with this guy, she could have just ended it with him. Unless she was scared of him. Because he's got a wife and stuff anyway. Just be with the guy. A lot more simple.
Exactly.
But she was probably using it maybe to get him jealous, get him riled up.
Yeah, so I'm not sure the boyfriend thing's true. But whether it was or it wasn't, she told Burgess, he's my boyfriend, we're going to get married. Unless you want to marry me.
Other people want to marry you, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Burgess said that he was not going to divorce his wife, though it was just not going to happen. And so she was like, right, well then this is over. Get out, we're done. So that's what happened. Over Christmas, Veronica's parents said that she was really down and that it just got worse and worse until she was in a depression. So eventually she decided that she just had to see Henry Burgess again. And so she went to find him at the local police drinking hole and then they eventually went back to the rented place. She asked him again, after they slept together, she asked again, like, are you going to divorce your wife? And same again, he just said, no, it's not happening. You can have me in this way, but I'm not getting divorced. So she was absolutely devastated. This time when she went home, she did tell her parents everything about the true nature of their relationship. So, I mean, you can imagine her parents' reaction. Like, parents are always a bit iffy about who you date, aren't they, and wanting them to be the best. So not only, so like now she's saying, yeah, he's got a wife and kids this whole time. They would have been absolutely fuming.
Yeah.
Like, so.
I would be really mortified at her choices if I was a parent.
My parents would be furious with me for going along with it. but at the same time, you'd be devastated too. So a week later, Burgess had come over to her parents' house to try and talk to her. And this time her dad was like, you're not welcome here. You need to leave now. So now things were slightly different. Now that her parents knew and he couldn't get close to the house, it was over, but it was over on her terms this time. Not like, well, if you want to be with me, be with me. If you don't, like, it was, he couldn't have her.
Yeah.
And Burgess just couldn't hack this. And he was flipping between like the agony of loving her and then this like passionate hatred for her because of what she'd done. And he said that he'd even thought about killing her because if she couldn't be with him, he didn't want her to be with anybody else. And he just became like a man obsessed. So that was around Christmas time. And then it was May of 1965, the following year, that things came to a head. So it'd been months of this back and forth, months of this stewing, and neither of them had forgotten each other.
And you know, in this whole time, the hardest thing is being one of their friends.
Like, oh, I've God, been in that position.
Oh, my God. Somebody do something because I am sick of hearing it.
Yep.
Nightmare. My friend was having an affair. Oh God, the amount of like romps in the bushes that I had to hear about.
And the, oh, he's got a wife. We're like, yeah, we know he's got a fucking wife. Yeah. Just find someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
We're never going to care about this relationship while he's got a wife.
Yeah.
So 1965, May the 14th, Burgess went drinking after work. Apparently he's stage sober. I think this is flagged up as a way of saying that he was in his right mind, but he had been to the police club after work and then he'd been to another pub after. At midnight he came home, so I don't think he was sober.
Yeah.
He came home at midnight and he told his wife what he was thinking. He had already told her about the affair.
Oh.
And they stayed together, but this time he came home and told her that I'm going to kill her. I'm going to kill Veronica. Like, months later, I think I'm just going to kill her now. So his wife obviously tried to stop him, but he grabbed his revolver and just pushed past her and out of the house. He'd also kept a key to Veronica's parents' house, which he took with him as he headed off on his motorbike.
Oh my God, that wife. Did she phone the police?
What's so amazing about him? Like, here's a picture of him. Let me show you his little face.
Ew.
He looks older than 36, right? Well, he would have been, what, 40 at this point?
Yeah, no, he looks way older. He looks like an impressionist painter.
He looks chubby. Like, I mean, I can only see his face and shoulders, but
a lot of facial hair.
Stocky.
Yeah.
Nothing particularly, like, dashing about him.
No.
But all these women will stay with him no matter what. So he arrived at Veronica's parents' home and let himself in using the key. So Veronica's mother, Mrs. Baker, she heard the key in the door and just thought, oh, it's my son coming home eventually from the pub. So she went to see him and greet him and was brought face to face with the gun-wielding Burgess. Her husband then followed to see what was happening. Burgess said, I don't want to hurt you, basically. But he did say,
just kill your daughter a second.
Yeah, he did say, he's like, I've come to kill Veronica.
What?
So her parents
like, oh, that's fine, off you go.
Yeah, what did you think was going to happen? So they, like, parents will fiercely defend their children above anything else. So his parents blocked his path, saying, we're not going to let this happen. And he says that he warned them to step back or he'd have to do something about it. And when they refused to just clear the way, he opened fire. Mrs. Baker was shot in the stomach and Mr. Baker was shot in the thigh. So at this point, they'd been shouting and there'd been now two gunshots. Veronica was coming down the stairs and with her parents still reeling from their injuries, Veronica was then also shot in the stomach.
Oh my God. It's like another weird, not easy to explain, like, act of violence, isn't it? Like, both of our killers today haven't done anything like this before and just suddenly just were like, yeah, I'm just going to do some murder.
Yeah, and just so determined, like, this murder's going to happen, but not really being able to say why it had to happen.
Really strange.
So then it said that while she was laying there and she was obviously bleeding, that she was murmuring. And in the article that I've got here is from another True Detective one. And it said that she said to him, I never stopped loving you. right before he held the gun. He held the gun to her chest and fired a second fatal shot.
That's just so... because she hadn't lived her life. She could have moved on, had a family. And it's just all been wrapped up in this prick.
Yeah, he could have let her have a life. Or he could have let her have a life with him. But he chose to fuck everything up.
Yeah.
So following this, though, he did go straight to the closest... I said that like it was a good thing. He went straight to the closest police station and turned himself in. Mrs. Baker, the mother, her injuries were so severe that by the time Burgess appeared in court just for the hearing, he was charged with one count of murder, two counts of attempted murder. She was still in a critical state in hospital. Whoa. Mr. Baker, he was called to give evidence at the hearing, but again, he was still unable to stand from his own injury, and he just presented his version of events, and he was just overcome with emotion about the whole situation. So her father, Mr. Baker, he explained that when he was faced with the gun, he and his wife had tried to calm Burgess down. They were trying to get him to sit down, trying to get him to talk. And he recalled how his wife had said, "You are not going to kill my Veronica." And that was at this point the gun was turned on her and she was shot. He then said that he moved towards Burgess to try and stop him when he'd seen Veronica coming down. And the next thing was the bang and just this burning pain in his left leg. So Burgess did go to trial at London Central Criminal Court in July. He pleaded not guilty to capital murder. He was hoping for manslaughter. He told the jury about his feelings towards Veronica. He stated, "I wanted her, but I wanted my family as well."
Well, you've got neither now, so well done.
Exactly. Bring What's her. Worse? Like, why would... I didn't... Yeah, you can... He's like, "I'm not going to divorce my wife because that's going to ruin my family. I'm going to go to prison for murder."
Yeah.
That doesn't keep your family.
They're
going to
love that.
Yeah, like divorce is not the worst thing.
Yeah.
So he explained that he'd been driven mad with jealousy ever since he had seen the photograph of the Scottish man and felt he couldn't stop himself from killing her.
Or just be with her then.
Maybe that's a little bit like the same thing. Maybe he's been a psychopath this whole time and his obsession was the fact that he'd had this girl from... presumably from might have been her first and then didn't want anyone else to have her, and maybe that's why he couldn't divorce his wife, because she was his and he didn't want anyone else to have her either.
Maybe
it's just that he likes to control the women, like that he wants to possess the women in his life, because neither of them he could let go.
And
he said he just couldn't stop himself. So his defense tried to argue a case for diminished responsibility, saying that he had no control of himself. And Dr. Ellis Stungo of Harley Street testified that Burgess was unstable and prone to morbid impulses and depression. He said that the emotions Burgess was feeling at the time had affected his rational judgment and therefore affected his responsibility. So basically, like, he was angry, so it's kind of okay. It's like a kid's thing. Like, the kid's like, "Oh, I'll punch someone, but it was fine because I was upset."
It's almost like, have you read the poem Porphyria's Lover?
Mm-mm.
It's about a guy who, this woman loves him, and he just want, like, he's so into it that he kills her because he doesn't want her to feel anything else. It's like a grim version of that. Like, but almost like the justification is, oh, well, it's about love, so it's sort of romantic.
Well, but his is more than, like, his is more just like, you can't blame me because I was under pressure, pretty much. But it's like loads of people might be upset, but they managed to control their impulse to act out. So why are you any different? He's not got any reason, really. Yeah. So obviously the prosecution were like, that's bullshit. They called their own expert, Desmond Curran, who is a professor of psychiatry. And he said that after two interviews with Burgess, he couldn't find any evidence that he was suffering from any sort of abnormality of the mind. The judge was unimpressed with Burgess' defense. And when he was summing up, he spoke about how trying to say that your strong emotions were causing you not to be able to control yourself is just an easy excuse for anyone who's committed murder. He was like, if we do this, then every single person that commits murder is going to say, well, I was feeling this way, so... So the jury deliberated, though, for 90 minutes, which I feel is quite a long time for someone who turned themselves in.
Yeah.
So they were actually considering whether or not... They obviously, this debate was clearly going on about...
Well, maybe, like, the coffees were good.
Maybe. And you think, yeah, we've got to go home soon.
My friend's got jury duty, and I'm so jealous.
It was obviously this issue with whether the attempted murders too, and whether or not they were. But eventually he was found guilty of murder and then two counts of grievous bodily harm against Veronica's parents. So the judge did sentence him to death. The death sentence in 1965 had just been suspended, actually, they were trying to get it abolished.
Yeah.
So initially it was suspended, and then it was abolished in 1969. So Burgess's sentence was changed to life in prison, and he was released after serving just 12 years in 1977.
No, 12 years?
12 years for shooting a woman to death and then shooting her parents.
Fuck.
I don't think that's...
That's not fair.
No. But that's it. We're done.
Okay, guys. So thanks for listening to those two really horrible crimes. If you would like to support the podcast, don't forget you can do that on patreon.com/lawtothepod. And you can just donate some money to us monthly, just small amounts there. You can tweet us at slaughterthepod. You can email us slaughterthepodcast@gmail.com. You can join the Facebook group. If you're interested in buying some t-shirts or merchandise for someone that you know that loves the podcast, don't forget the best way to find it is to go onto the Facebook group. Just type in S'Laughter. It should come up. And the pinned post has got some links to the merchandise there. So that supports us as well, and we get the money from that. So that would be a really great support. I hope you guys have a lovely Christmas and a happy new year. And we'll be back in a few weeks.
See you soon.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.